You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering the case of Mary Virginia Carpenter. Mary 21 was last seen June 1, 1948, after being dropped off by a cab driver on the campus of Texas State College for Women in Denton, Texas. It's been 76 years and her case is still unsolved, but I have full faith it can be solved. Mary was an only child born January 25, 1927 in Texarkana, Texas. There are some discrepancies among the articles about what Mary liked to be called. Some articles called her Mary Virginia, some called her Virginia, and some referred to her as Jamie. So in this instance, I'm going to refer to her as she is listed on the Jane Doe Network and the Charlie Project websites, her original government name. Mary would get very ill as a small child. The actual cause is still unknown today, but many of her young years were spent going in and out of doctor's offices trying to figure out why her health was declining. Mary would become essentially paralyzed from an infection later determined to be in her hip. A doctor in Memphis would be able to surgically remove the infection from her hip bone. Mary had a long recovery to include being in a contraption to help her leg heal back into the proper position. This was all before the age of 5, so when Mary attended kindergarten, she attended in a steel contraption that strapped from her hip down to her heel that helped her learn to walk again. Mary was very self-conscious and struggling with appetite and to maintain weight, so she was pulled from kindergarten and brought home to continue healing. She would return to school the following year without a brace, and by the age of 12 was said to have been completely cured. Because of this illness and infection, she did lose some strength in her right leg, leaving her with a limp. When she entered high school, her father became very ill and would pass away when she was 15. Teachers described Mary as loyal and had an unusual amount of common sense, yet struggled academically. Mary was quiet and often stayed out of her peer activities because she struggled with her leg after the illness and keeping pace with her peers. However, she did join band and became a majorette. Mary would decide she wanted to pursue journalism after high school and was accepted at University of Arkansas in 1944, where after a few semesters, she decided she would like to switch her major and pursue a career in the medical field. Mary's mother, Hazel, would say that Mary wanted to be a nurse but understood with her lasting leg injury from her illness that she would not be able to manage those long shifts on her feet. So instead, Mary decided she wanted to be a laboratory technician, as it would not be as strenuous on her body. To achieve this new goal Mary set for herself, she would have to transfer to college and get her science credits. Mary would attend TSCW from 1945 to 1946, when she would leave college suddenly to return home to take care of her mother who had fallen ill and needed major surgery at the time of recovery. Just a week after her mother's surgery, Mary would have an appendicitis attack and require an operation. Both Mary and Hazel would end up being hospitalized together for a month. Mary would form a relationship with a man in the hospital who would bring both Mary and her mother back to their home after their hospital stay. This relationship would result in the two getting engaged, but there was disapproval amongst family members, and it was said that Mary would call off the engagement 3 weeks before the marriage. Mary had taken a job at an insurance company when she had come home to take care of her mother and was working to save money to go back to school. So when she had enough money in the summer of 1948, that's when she decided it was time to leave her job and return to school. In 1948, Mary's plan was to return to Texas State College for Women, now called Texas Woman University. She was planning to complete a summer term there and then in the fall begin her term for the technical laboratory technician. During Mary's time away from school, she had begun sketching, and friends said that she sketched a portrait of her father from memory, and it was the most lifelike portrait they had seen to his likeness. In the days leading up to Mary's disappearance, she would attend an annual picnic at the junior college at a lake near Dangerfield, Texas. When she arrived home, her mother said she was extremely sunburnt and she kept falling asleep and eventually would pass out at dinner, to which her mother would ring the doctor, who told her that Mary had sun poisoning. So when Mary was planning to head to Denton to attend school, she was extremely sunburnt and still healing. Hazel really wanted to bring Mary to school, but Mary insisted that she could take the train on her own and she would be just fine. On June 1st that morning when they awoke, they thought that they had woken up too late to catch the train. However, to Hazel's disappointment, the train had arrived on time. She would later admit that she secretly was hoping the train would be late and she could bring Mary to school. Mary would refuse to board the train until her mother kissed her goodbye, which Hazel did, and she watched Mary board the train and stand on the back platform dressed in a light white dress with red and green stripes, silver buttons running down the front, a white straw hat with the brim flipped up, and a white feather stuck in the back, complete with red leather high heel shoes and a gold Widenauer watch. She was carrying a red purse with no more than $20 in it, a hat box, and a steamer trunk brown with a matching cosmetic bag. Hazel remembers that last look at Mary, thinking that she was so radiant and beautiful. Hazel stood on the platform and waved goodbye to her daughter, and that was the last time she would ever see her. While on the train ride there, Mary would meet Marjorie Webster, described as a middle-aged school teacher, also on her way to attend the same university as Mary. Both of them decided upon arriving at Denton that they would take a cab together to the university. A taxi driver, driven by a man known as Jack Zachary, aka Edgar Ray, arrived to take them to the college dormitories. When Marjorie was being dropped off at the Fitzgerald dormitory on campus, Mary would realize that she forgot to check on her trunk at the Denton station. She asked Jack, the taxi driver, if he could bring her back to the train station. He said he could and it would be about 75 cents, so Mary agreed and Marjorie offered to come with her back to the train station. But Mary refused the offer, telling her she will be fine. Mary is seen again at the train station that evening, and she speaks to a railroad employee named Mr. Buttrell, who tells her that the trunk would not arrive until later, and she can pick it up then. Jack would tell Mary to sign the back of her claim check now, and he would pick it up later and deliver it to her in the morning. Mary agreed to this arrangement, handing Jack her luggage receipt and writing, "Virginia Carpenter, room 200, Breckenridge," and she would tip an extra dollar for this trip. Jack would say that him and Mary returned to campus around 9 p.m. He would state that Mary was getting out of the cab outside of the Breckenridge Hall, and she would see two young men in a pale-colored or cream-colored convertible that she seemed to recognize and know. She seemed comfortable with them and knew them and said that they would take her luggage from the cab and help her. Jack would say that he left at that point, and that was the last time he saw Mary. He did, however, return the following morning with her steamer trunk, which he left on the lawn outside of the dormitories. He states that's where Mary told him to leave it. However, in the receipt that she left him, it stated her dormitory and which room she was in, so it was odd that it was left out in the front lawn, as this is not how trunks were delivered by other taxi drivers and had never been handled this way in the past. Mary's trunk would sit in the front lawn of the Breckenridge dormitory for 2 days unclaimed, and she never checked into her dormitory or enrolled in her courses. Mary's trunk would be taken to the dean's office after being unclaimed. June 4th, 3 days after Mary was last seen, her boyfriend Kenny Brom would call Mary's mother, letting her know that he wasn't able to get a hold of Mary and was growing concerned. Mary's mother began calling her friends, relatives, anyone to see if Mary had decided to visit them, but nobody had seen her. On the 5th, Mary's mother would reach out to the Denton Police Department to report Mary missing. The Denton police reportedly told Hazel not to worry, to go back to bed, and they would look into it the following day. Mary's mother couldn't sleep. She couldn't just sit at home, so at 2 a.m., her and her friend Lucy decided to get in the car and drive to Denton to begin searching for Mary and meet with investigators. Denton investigators did as they said. They began the search for Mary the following morning. They searched the Denton area by air and the lakes and local ponds by boat. A search team was assembled to search the ground in different directions. They searched local roadways and back roads, tanks, abandoned wells, storm drains, and surrounding woods for any signs of Mary. There was a statewide search effort for Mary as well, and the light-colored convertible Jack stated he last saw Mary with. Investigators would open Mary's trunk, searching for clues as to where Mary might have gone. While it didn't yield any leads, it did confirm that Mary's purse was not in her trunk. Now they knew to search for Mary and her purse. By Wednesday, June 9th, a reward fund was created for information on Mary and her whereabouts. Her description, her picture, was all circulated in other law enforcement agencies as well as cable centers and train stations. By Friday, the reward was $1,368, which would be around $14,000 today. Investigators did spend time interviewing Jack and decided to give him a polygraph on Friday the 9th, which they stated he passed. They would also interview Jack's wife, who told officers he was home by 10 p.m. that night. Investigators would also question Mary's boyfriend, and he too would pass a polygraph. An investigator felt confident that her boyfriend was never involved in her disappearance. Confusing rumors would plague the investigation for the next 2 years. There would be rumors that Mary's body had been found, her purse had been found, she had returned home, countless sightings of her in other states and different stations, none of which they were able to confirm by investigators. Mary's reward fund would reach $3,000 in those 2 years, but would be returned at the end of those 2 years to all the donors, as it didn't bring any new leads or information in. In 1955, 7 years after Mary's disappearance, she was ruled deceased by the state of Texas, as it was their law at the time that after 7 years of a person missing, they are declared deceased. Three wooden boxes would be found containing female bones in a smokehouse near an abandoned farmhouse around 7 miles from Jefferson, Texas, which is around 3 hours from where Mary was last seen in Denton, Texas. The bones were of a white female with a shortened leg like Mary. However, experts stated that the dental records did not match and the remains were ruled out as Mary's. There was a theory that circulated then and continues to circulate throughout the posts about Mary that she was a victim of a well-known serial killer at the time. I won't be naming the serial killer. You can find it in any of the articles that I will share. This theory spread and moved through the news because it did have some weight to it. Mary happened to be acquaintances slash friends with three of the serial killer's victims. However, law enforcement at the time and now still states that there is no connection between Mary's disappearance and the three other victims. They don't believe it is connected to the serial killer. One of the biggest reasons that investigators don't connect Mary to the serial killer was because the serial killer attacked couples who were out at the night parked in their cars. Mary's disappearance did not line up with the MO of the serial killer. In 1957, 9 years after Mary's disappearance, a woman would come to the police station stating that she had escaped a man who had attempted to sexually assault her in his cab. And that man turned out to be the same cab driver that was last seen with Mary. Jack's wife would also come forward and state that the night that Mary disappeared, he actually hadn't returned home that night until around 3 a.m. Jack was initially charged with attempted rape. However, the woman would drop her charges and Jack would never be charged or arrested in Mary's disappearance and would pass away in 1984. In 1998, investigators would receive a tip that two men abducted and sexually assaulted Mary, burying her remains a few days later after her disappearance in a dam at a stock tank on the campus that she vanished from. Both the men in this tip had passed away in 1998 and were never publicly named by investigators. Investigators followed up on this tip, searching the dam, but they never did find anything connected to Mary. Mary's mother had passed away in 1980. Her father, like I mentioned, had passed away before she disappeared, and she was an only child. She does have some remaining cousins that are still hoping to bring her justice, and investigators still list her case as active. This is definitely one of those cases that is going to take word of mouth sharing Mary's story again and again publicly to help her solve her case. I will be sharing all the information and sources and links that I have connected to Mary's case. Please feel free to share it in any format you're comfortable with. Thank you for taking the time to get to know about Mary Carpenter's case today. And don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, hit like, share, and retweet. Because every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.